Thanks, Matt. Great to be back at the barge. Nice to see a few old friends here. And I'll give you a little sort of 10-minute burst of my story. I'll try and spare you the kind of gory medical details. If you've read about a crisis in the NHS, I'm personally responsible for that. So if you can never get any treatment at your GP, you know who to blame. And then we'll have a quick look at this little passage from Luke, one of four eyewitness accounts that wrote about Jesus. But I want to start with quoting, if you like, a verse. Now you think, oh, he's going to bash me with the Bible. No. From The Guardian. I mean, how politically correct do you get, you know, The Guardian? And maybe you think, aha, it's going to be a quote from Jesus in The Guardian or something. No, it's from Eddie Izzard. And we don't get much more progressive than Eddie Izzard, do you? Well, Eddie Izzard was recently interviewed in The Guardian. And he said his whole life was basically transformed in a bad way because when he was 8, his mother died. And he said all his life he's been wrestling with this. It's been the hardest thing to deal with. And he said this, which I thought was really moving. He said, if only one person had once come back from beyond the grave to tell us that there was something beyond there, because he wants to see his mother again. Well, friends, the good news here is that once someone did come back from beyond the grave, that's the claim of the Christian faith, which I'd like to share with you. But just to give you a little burst of my own story. Yeah, I was 20 years in Credit Suisse. I could never get a job anywhere else, so I got stuck there. And then one day, I got a phone call from Hawes Bank, and I've heard all the jokes. Yeah, they were, and that was great fun, and a wonderful family to work with. And then one day, about 5 years ago, I was in the shower, and I felt this little lump on my rib, and about the size of a pea. And my wife and guys, if your wife or girlfriend says you should do something, you should do something. There's a word from the Bible for you this morning. And she said, go to the GP, Jeremy. So I went to the GP, and the GP said, oh, it's nothing to worry about, just a fatty lump. But we'll get it checked out anyway. And then any of you who've been through this kind of cancer journey, which sounds so American, doesn't it? Anyway, sorry, Matt, but there we are. So it was a kind of a journey, a bad journey, basically, a bit like a kind of nightmare on the DLR or something. But so basically each person you meet then says, no, I'm not sure what that is, we'll refer you. And eventually you get referred to the Marsden. Okay, well, the Marsden does one thing, and one thing only is 100% cancer. So even a dope like me figures out, okay, that's what you've got. But the good news was when I got there, this was, almost exactly 5 years ago, that they said, look, we've caught it early, should be fine. And it should be curable. So I went through chemo. I didn't go through chemo. I went through surgery and radiotherapy. And then for about 2 years, I went back to work, and I thought everything was fine. And then one day, 2.5 years ago, I went to adjust my collar, and I felt this massive lump on my collarbone like a golf ball. So I knew immediately what that was. Went back to the Marsden, and they said, you've got incurable cancer, and it's everywhere. You've got tumours everywhere, which is still the case now. I know you're all looking at me and thinking, wow, Jeremy looks so fine figure of a man, full of fighting, no hair, but all the top people, in the barge have no hair. And sorry, Matt, mine does grow back, so there we are, low blow. And the next question you obviously ask is, well, how long have I got to live? And the answer was 6 to 18 months. So the more brilliant mathematicians among you can work out that, okay, well, that was 2.5 years ago, so the oncologist was wrong, so that's good. I'm thankful about that, thankful to be alive. But I'm not cured. I've been through endless cycles of chemo, and I just finished one just now. I've also, hence the NHS crisis, I've had two detached retinas, one in each eye, which is a bit of a challenge. So for a period last year, I was kind of blind, more or less. I had to kind of be led around, by the arm. I've got three sisters. One of them said she would lead me around in London as long as I wore a badge saying it's my brother, not my husband. I thought that was particularly charming, Kick someone when you're down. Thanks a lot. Sarah, that's her name. So there we are. So that's where we are. Now, the thing I want to share with you is that there is hope beyond the grave. There is hope. And that is the heart of the Christian message, that Jesus came, and we remember that obviously at Christmas, and he came and he died, but he rose again. He rose again. He rose again from the dead. And death is a terrible enemy, and we'd rather do anything else in life than think about death. A very wise man called Blaise Pascal. I don't know any of you into any mathematicians here? Any mathematicians? No? All looking a bit dazed. Okay, well, Blaise Pascal was a famous French mathematician who said, he's also a writer, he said that humans will think about anything apart from thinking about death, and I think that's true. And that's why many of us busy ourselves with work and money and careers, and they're not wrong things, but the most important thing in life is the question of what's it all about, and is there anything else beyond the grave? Now, Benjamin Franklin, who was a bit later than Pascal, said you can avoid everything in life apart from death and taxes. Now, I know a few of you work for Credit Suisse, but I can tell you that having worked for 10 years in private banking in Switzerland, that's not altogether true. I hope there's nobody from Credit Suisse compliance here. I'll get myself into trouble. This was a long time ago. But anyway, people do avoid one of the two, but you can't avoid death, can you? And I'm sorry to be a bit gloomy, friends, this gloomy lunchtime, but the death rate in this room is 100%. Isn't it? Each one of us is going to die at some point of one thing or another. There is no escape route from death. Now, being a Christian isn't immunity from death. It's not like an insurance policy, but it means that we're convinced that Jesus really did come back from the dead, and that if we believe in him and trust in him, then when I die, that I'll close my eyes in death, and the next thing I'll see him face to face. And that makes all the difference in the world if you're ill. It just is utterly transformational. And it makes such a difference. And you see that, friends, another cheery topic, in a funeral. Okay, two funerals recently. So one funeral, a friend, a humanist funeral, 21 minutes it lasted. Okay, and he's a lovely guy, and family spoke movingly about memories. And, you know, there's this poem which I don't like, but you probably, if you like it, I don't want to offend you about, you know, in the next room and all that stuff, which is, it's kind of whistling in the dark, isn't it? You know, if you walk through a dark wood or maybe dark Canary Wharf at night, you think you might get mugged or something by some banker trying to meet their end of year targets. You maybe whistle to keep your spirits up, don't you? So that maybe is what some of you also are thinking about the Christian faith, that, well, maybe it's just a kind of whistling in the dark, because it does make a difference in terms of the second funeral, I forgot. So the first funeral was this humanist. The other funeral was, I didn't go, it's a friend of a friend, but anyway, they're Christians, and their 16-year-old son died at school very, very unexpectedly. And just your heart goes out for them. And he left one morning and said, bye, Mom, love you, see you later, and that was it. I never saw him again. Now, at that funeral, several people said to me, and these people, you know, some of them are Christians and some are not, they were just gobsmacked and awestruck by the faith of the family, saying that we will see him again, we will see Charlie again, that this death is not the end, and there is something beyond death, there is hope. But the key thing, friends, and hence the whistling in the dark, is not is it helpful if you're staring at death as I am, because obviously it is. And it's much better to think, yeah, there's hope, there's Jesus, than there's nothing, that's it, you've had your lot. Come in number eight, your time is up, that's it. But the key question is it true? Is it true? That is the key question. And if you're not a Christian, this question is so important. Is it true? Did Jesus really come back from the dead? I submit to you, it's more important than every other question that you can conceivably be thinking about this lunchtime, which might be, what shall I have for lunch? Have I done my Christmas shopping? What's my boss going to ask me to do when I get back? What's my Christmas bonus? What's my bonus? I don't know. Do they still have bonuses in banking nowadays? Yeah, probably. They've all been abolished, Adrian, I guess. Yeah, so anyway, I hope some of you still get a bonus. I mean, these are not wrong things to think about, but the most important question, and the evidence about that is in here, is did Jesus rise from the dead? So this is a gospel, one of four eyewitness accounts written by Jesus. And I would just encourage you, if you came, if a Christian friend brought you, please do yourself a favor. Look at the evidence. And if it's true, then it's more important than anything else in life combined. If it's not true, you've wasted maybe a few minutes. It's worth the time and effort. Now, why do I think it's true? Well, I don't have time to go into that in great detail, but I would say because of Sherlock Holmes. Sherlock Holmes, is that in the Bible? No, it's not in the Bible. No, in fact, Conan Doyle had some decidedly odd ideas. He believed literally in fairies at the bottom of the garden, so I'm not recommending him as a great guide to anything. But You all know Sherlock Holmes, I guess. Silver Blaze is probably his best known story. It's the one with the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime. Probably any of you seen the theatre show or the film or read the book? No, God. One or two, okay, good. I didn't want to think that Canary Wharf was full of cultural Philistines. Perish the thought, you're all too busy making money. So anyway, in the book Silver Blaze, there's a murder. And the curious incident of the dog in the nighttime, by the way, is that the dog does nothing. And Watson, who's stupid, who's Holmes' psychic, is trying to puzzle it out. And Holmes says to Watson, he says this. He says, Watson, once you've eliminated, when you look at the evidence and you eliminate all other possibilities, then whatever remains, however unlikely, must be true. Let me repeat that. Watson, when you look at the evidence, you eliminate all other possibilities of who might have murdered this person, then whatever remains, however unlikely, or I would say in this case, however much you actually don't want to believe it's true, must be true. And the Christian faith stands or falls on the question, did Jesus really, really, really rise from the dead? And when you're facing death, that is an incredibly important question to answer. And I can say with all my heart, yes, I do believe it. I do believe it's true. And if you look at all other possible explanations of what could have happened, that the disciples stole the body, that the Roman authorities stole the body, that Jesus wasn't really dead, or that the disciples just kind of imagined it. If you look at it, and I'd encourage you to chat about that with your friends, then it doesn't make sense. It just doesn't make sense. So what we're left with is that Jesus really did come back from the dead. More than that, that he actually conquered death, and more than that, that he offers us a way out of not physical death, because each of us have to die, but out of spiritual death, out of eternal death, out of eternal separation from God. And that offer is something that I'm authorized, not by the Financial Conduct Authority, but by God himself to offer to you today. That's the Christian offer. Believe in Jesus. Jesus says, I'm the resurrection and the life. Isn't that wonderful? And it's available freely. There's no charge. No hidden trail fees or anything else that these evil bankers get in. No, it's a free offer to anybody who will believe. Now, let's have a look at the Bible passage, if you don't mind. This was written by Luke, who was one of the four people who was either writing, who was an eyewitness or collated eyewitness accounts. And this is a true story that really happened 2,000 years ago. And let's just read it quickly, and then I'll just make a few comments on it. Soon afterwards, he, that's Jesus, went to a town called Nain, and his disciples, and a great crowd went with him. As he drew near to the gate of the town, behold, a man who had died was being carried out, the only son of his mother, and she was a widow. And a considerable crowd from the town was with her. When the Lord saw her, he had compassion on her, and he said to her, don't weep. Then he came up and touched the bier, and the bearer stood still. And he said, young man, I say to you, arise. And the dead man sat up and they began to speak. Jesus gave him back to his mother. Fear seized them all, and they glorified God, saying, a great prophet has arisen among us, and God has visited his people. And this report about him spread through the whole of Judea and all the surrounding country. So I don't have a map here, but imagine that this is, my glasses are the Lake of Galilee, okay? You've got Jerusalem here. Israel, the Jordan River, and at the top of the Lake of Galilee is the town of Capernaum, where they're starting out, and about 15 miles to the northwest is Nazareth, where Jesus was brought up, and then about 15 miles to the southwest is Nain. Okay, so it's like a triangle, and Jesus starts out from Capernaum, and they go on a day's walk, 15 miles, that's what you can do roughly in a day, to Nain. And Nain's still there. It's a real place. It's a kind of two-bit town. And then it's a two-bit town. Now it's on a hill. And imagine a kind of like a walking tour, a walking university. Jesus is going around. He's teaching people. He's talking. And they're all chatting away. And it's all good stuff. The disciples, by the way, are dopey. They often get everything wrong, which should be consolation for those of us who, like me, who struggle sometimes to, you know, come to faith. Faith doesn't happen overnight. It's a process, typically. And Jesus is very patient with his disciples and teaching them. And then as he's going up, this crowd of people are going up the hill into Nain, they notice there's a crowd coming the other way out. So the crowd going up is meeting the crowd coming out, and they're going to meet in the gate of the town. So one or the other has to give way, doesn't it? And imagine you're with Jesus, you're listening, you're talking, you're maybe having, you're on your phone or whatever people did in those days, having a sandwich or something, and suddenly you notice this, and then as you get nearer, as the two groups get nearer, you notice, oh, it's a funeral. It's a funeral. So on the body, the body is being carried, not in a coffin, but on a stretcher, like a football match. Now, I don't mean the golf cart ones they have, but, you know, like a stretcher where people, stretcher bearer. So on it would be the dead body, and face covered with a cloth. And by the way, that boy who just died, it would have been the same day, because it's hot, you always bury people the same day. So that boy would have been alive when Jesus left Capernaum to go to Nain. Now he's dead and he's being buried. And there's a big crowd of people going out. Why? Because they're feeling very sad for his mother. No social security, she's basically bust. She's got no husband, she's got only one child, and that child is now dead. So death, friends, is a grim thing. It's a grim thing. I don't want to die. I would much rather live. Paul in the Bible says, I don't really mind. For me, I'd much rather live, partly because also the effect on your family, and just because I like being alive, to be honest. If I had more faith, maybe I wouldn't feel so strongly. But death is grim. And what does Jesus do? He says to her, don't weep. Don't weep. Now, friends, unless he's about to do something, that's actually an incredibly cruel thing to say. You know, if you go to a funeral or someone, you say, don't cry, that's like callousness, isn't it? So what does he do? He says, young man, I say to you, get up. The dead man sat up and he began to speak. And friends, this wasn't done in a corner. This was done with hundreds of people around. And this was written within a few years of Jesus' death. So you would only write this, otherwise someone would say, well, I was there. Yes, he wasn't dead. He was just going to the hospital. He wasn't feeling well. You know, what was it? Mark Twain said the rumors of my death had been exaggerated or something. So, no, he was, this boy was really dead, and Jesus raised him from the dead and gave him back to his mother. So an amazing miracle, which obviously also speaks of Jesus' own resurrection from the dead. And the people, not surprisingly, are afraid. And when we start to think, maybe there is a God. Maybe there is a God who loves me and know me. And this God made the whole universe, friends. The whole universe made every atom in it. Is unutterably bigger. Any possible conception you have of God, include myself, is far too small. God is unutterably greater. Think of the size of the universe. God maybe has a potting shed with 20 universes in it. I don't know. And anyway, he holds the whole universe in his hand. He made everything in it. And the people, they're in awe. Crumbs, who is this? So in a few minutes, I'll be happy to answer any questions. You can ask me anything you like. But I'd like to make three final points about this. Number one, Jesus is fully human and fully divine. That's the Christian claim, okay? That God didn't leave us in this mess with death and compliance departments. I didn't say that. But all the stuff that is annoying in life, and I'm not comparing, no offense to anybody in compliance, but that God didn't leave us in that. But he came, that's the message of Christmas, he came in the form of a tiny embryo in the womb of a virgin and was born and is 100% human and 100% divine. And Jesus exhibits two characteristics, one from each side of his nature. So first of all, he shows compassion. I mean, maybe there is a God, but he's so remote, he's not really involved in our affairs and it doesn't really make a difference. No, Jesus says to her, don't weep. Don't weep. And the word here, compassion, is literally Jesus had his intestines twisted. You would say colloquially he was gutted. That's what the Greek means. So he's deeply moved. And God is deeply moved by our human predicament. And he doesn't want to leave us facing death. He wants to rescue us. That's what Jesus means. Jesus means savior. Yeshua in Hebrew. It means that he came to save. So Jesus has compassion. And God has compassion, friends, on us in the sadness and difficulties of life, but more than that, he has power. If you had compassion and no power, or power and no compassion, neither would be of much use or interest, but he has both, and that's the offer for you today. A God-man who is both all-compassionate and all-powerful. Because he says to a young man, get up. Now, Jesus here is mirroring what some Old Testament prophets called Elijah and Elisha did hundreds of years before, and they in the same area also raised people from the dead, but they did it in a very different way. They had a different death methodology, if you like. What they did was they fell on their knees and they said, oh God, raise this boy, give us back to life. They prayed earnestly and God answers their prayer. But Jesus doesn't do that, does he? No, because he's God. He doesn't need to pray to God. He is God. And there's another story, which is if you look in John, where Jesus calls Lazarus out of the tomb. And a little boy in Sunday school many years ago, the minister said, because they roll back the stone, and Jesus says, "Lazarus, come out." And the question was, why did Jesus say, "Lazarus, come out"? And the little boy answered, which is a good answer, because they all might have come out otherwise, because it would have been a communal tomb, and you'd have got all these people coming out. No, I don't want all of you, I just want him. So Jesus speaks to us, doesn't he? He speaks to us in our death state, and he calls us, and he invites us to arise. The dead man sat up and began to speak, and Jesus gave him back to his mother. That's my second point, that Jesus transforms things. He turns things around 180 degrees, because that mother and her dead son, they're going down, friends. They're going down to death. And I'm sorry to say, and I know this is very cheery, that that's us, because we're all going down to death, and we're all going to die at some point. You're all will one day be in the same position as me. I hope you all live to 100. You'll look quite healthy. Well, most of you, anyway. One or two of you look like you're working a bit too hard, but that's a different story, anyway. So, yeah. We're all going to die at some point. We're all on that path to dusty death. But Jesus, when he meets us, he reverses it. He turns it around. But we have to do something about it. We have to have faith. And when Jesus comes, he transforms our life. And that's what we sometimes talk in Christian circles about repentance, don't we? Well, that's just turning around. That's turning around from the path we're going towards sin and towards death and turning back to him. Now, my third point is, look at the faith in the story, friends. And you may say, like Sherlock Holmes, where is the faith in the story? Well, there is faith. Do you see where it is? It's in verse 14. Look at that. And Jesus came up and touched the bier, and the bearers stood still. Now, these stretcher bearers, they were no doubt busy people. They were probably also thinking of their email or their end of, do any of you have end of year targets and stuff, or appraisals? That's always a stupid thing, I think, this time of year. Who wants to do appraisals? I miss those like a hole in the head, I can tell you. So these stretcher bearers are there. Excuse me, mate, we're trying to bury this boy. You know, no, they don't. They stop, huh? They stop. Now, what? And everybody stops. The mother stops, everybody stops. Now, why do they stop? I don't know. But maybe it was out of curiosity. Maybe, what have we got to lose? Well, there's this strange rabbi with all these crew of rather odd-looking disciples and odd bods and odd people. And okay, well, let's see what happens. If they push past, none of this would have happened. And remember, also, friends, Jesus meets them at just the right time, and he's meeting you at just the right time. At the appointed time, which is 20 to 2, actually, comes, we've got to get a move on, yeah, on a Wednesday lunchtime, Jesus is meeting you. Now, you can push past him, say, I'm busy, I've got to get back to work. Or you can look at the evidence, which is what I encourage you to do with this gospel. Have a chat with a friend, sit in Starbucks. You don't have to come to church. You won't be asked to pray or read out loud. Just sit and have a chat. What you've got here is you've got Bible verses on one side and just some kind of questions and answers on the other side. Have a chat. Because if it's true, it's more important than anything. So these people, They at least had curiosity. They at least saw, maybe there is something here. And if you have any sense of that, any sense that there might be something here, then look, please, I beg you, I implore you, look at the evidence. That's why I'm a Christian. That's why I believe that Jesus really did rise from the dead. Because faith is not irrational. No, it's extremely rational. And Jesus really did rise from the dead. He says, I am the resurrection and the life. I am the resurrection and life. That's the offer on the table, and I would encourage you to consider it, to chat about it, and to meet. And in the same way as that boy went from death to life, you too may go from death to life.